The House of Brainiac has arrived in Action Comics. So has Joshua Williamson to Superman All-Stars, which is the name of this this phase of Action Comics. We've got not just action on the docket. We've got five.
Count them.
Five of this week's biggest books. We've got the aforementioned Action Comics 1064. We have The Batman First Night number 2, the listener pick this week. I have a lot to say about that. You guys did amazing this week in the poll. Ultimate X-Men number 2, Resurrection of Magneto number 4, and Transformers number 7. So we've got five books.
How many?
But we've got only three pals. We have Kale.
What's up, hot dogs?
Tyler.
Hello. Hi.
And I'm Sean. And thank you for tuning in. Thank you for hanging out with us, whether you are with us live now or in the future, wherever you are. Thank you for coming and spending your time with the Comics Pals. Let's not waste your time and get right into our review of Action Comics 1064. This is written by Joshua Williamson, with art by Rafa Sandoval. Trying to find the credits page, which DC loves to hide from me.
It's like a Where's Waldo of stuff.
It literally is.
Yeah.
It literally is. It's like they don't want you to find it. Got it. So Alejandro Sanchez on the colors, Dave Sharp on the letters. Now, what we essentially get here is an invasion of Earth. It's the Zarnians, I guess they're called.
Yep.
That's Lobo's race of people, and they have teamed up with Brainiac for some reason to invade Earth and bottle up superpowered individuals, people close to Clark, and things like that. And it's Superman just fighting them off, pretty much. I have mixed feelings about this comic.
Interesting. I was pleasantly surprised to see Rafa Sandoval. I had forgotten he's drawing this arc. So as soon as I opened the page and I saw that, I was like, oh, hold on. This is actually what I remember, like, good stuff being. So I was much more into that than the previous arc was the Jason Aaron arc, right? That was by Don Timms, I believe.
Yep.
This is more down my alley. So seeing the Rafa Sandoval art there was good. And then kind of going back to the whole family aspect of things, I did enjoy going back to that whole, this is the super family, and kind of showing those characters again and all that. I thought this was a fine, fun issue, like opening issue to this arc.
I had a great time.
Yeah.
I was thrown a little bit in the first half. I felt like the first half was trying maybe a little hard. With, you know, oh, it's Lois's first day off in so many years, and she's going to go do yoga in the park with Jimmy.
That was
and
beyond annoying. Truthfully, a waste of time.
On the way, she's going to listen to a killer iPod playlist, and she's going to run into absolutely everybody she knows on the way to the park. Listen, I lived in New York City. Like,
I think she was listening to on an
nobody
iPod?
I know.
Kale, what do you think she's listening to on an iPod? If you had to guess. And also, like, the idea of Lois having an iPod actually tracks for me. I feel like she would be analog with that, you know, as analog as possible with an MP3 player.
Do you know? It's a Pete Ross mixtape. Isn't Pete Ross, isn't that Clark's friend from...
From work, yeah.
Smallville?
Isn't he at the Daily Planet too?
Is he?
I think so.
Somebody will know about that.
It was a little weird. Yeah.
I think she's listening to, there's a jazz artist called Organ Freeman. That's who I think she's listening.
I was going to say the same thing, actually. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Listen, we're on the same wavelength. But the back half of this, for me, was thrilling. I was into it.
I really didn't like the opening sequence with Lois. I don't get it. I don't get it. The double page splash that shows Superman just, you know, flying with the birds and everything. That was really cool. It looked great. And I think the biggest consistency for me throughout was the fact that the art was phenomenal. Rafa Sandoval did such an incredible job. And the colors were really great too. There were a lot of clashing colors and things going on, and I thought all that was handled really excellently. But I am beyond done with the invasion of Metropolis angle. The last three or four stories that I have read involving Superman involved an invasion of Metropolis by multiple of the same character, or a complete takeover in the case of Brainiac. That is played out. I don't care if it's a Zarnian. I don't care if it's a Kryptonian. I'm sick of it.
So what do we have? We had the Parasite one. We had the Metallo invasion of Metropolis. Yeah. We had Bizarro. And now Brainiac.
Zarnian and Brainiac.
True. Why do people live in Metropolis?
Same reason people live in Gotham.
I guess, yeah. Rent's cheaper.
I'm with you. Brainiac and the Zarnians, though, sort of made me sit up a little bit. Because to me, that Brainiac alone is a real threat. And Lobo alone can match with Superman. So a bunch of Lobos, that's a big deal. And Izzy pointed out that the Sarnians may be supposed to be extinct.
The book comments on that.
Does some, it? Okay, yeah, I thought, yeah, I thought so.
Question that. But that's clearly meant to be a mystery that we follow through.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like Brainiac hasn't bottled up full civilizations before, so.
I'm actually just happened to be on that page. These are Zarnians, right? I thought Lobo's people were all dead. There you go. I found those angles, Brainiac and the Zarnians, a lot more intriguing than what's come before.
I think the added part where Lex even mentions, like, oh, the Brainiac and the Brainiac drones are there as the control, whereas the Zarnians are there for chaos. And they're there for a reason that Brainiac brought them there for. I like that bit. I thought that bit was interesting.
I really enjoyed Brainiac's dialogue. I really enjoyed Lex. Lex gets a really badass moment. Mm-hmm. I think it's cool that writers find a way to make Lex do cool things, even though he's completely a human. And this just felt like something he could reasonably have, like a shield around his body that he can generate for a limited amount of time. I thought that was pretty badass. And just the way that his shield expires while he's still surrounded by the fire and danger just made him look kind of cool. Yeah. I like that. I'm intrigued by what Williamson sets up here, but I am done to death with clones of people. You know, Kale mentioned how Lobo alone is a threat to Superman. Well, we already know that 5,000 Lobos is not going to be a threat to Superman. So I just can't really get up for that, because it feels like the diminishing of Lobo, because the idea is he's just one. So there's so many that's going to be a problem. But what we see in reality is these characters end up getting watered down to serve the purpose of the plot. So I'll be more interested in this when we kind of move beyond the invasion and get into more of the meat of Brainiac's plan, which is always good. And I love Joshua Williamson. So I would still pull this despite the more, like, we've been down this road many times recently, first issue that we got here.
Yeah, I get that. I'm with that.
I do prefer this than what we got previously with Jason Aaron. Nothing against Jason Aaron, but this feels, there's something about Williamson's writing and how he handles the team dynamic here and the ensemble that is more interesting to me. Whereas I feel like Jason Aaron's is a whole different book entirely.
Yeah, this felt current. Whereas Aaron's just kind of felt like it was, you know, whenever.
Sure. Yeah. And I think Aaron has talked about the fact that, like, he didn't have some big Superman story he wanted to tell. They asked him, hey, do you want to do this Superman All-Stars bit? And he said, sure, I'll come up with something. And, you know, we got what we got. I agree, though, that this feels more current. And knowing that we're getting, I forget her name, but the lady Brainiac.
Brainiac?
This is it?
No, that
Brainiac
is
Queen, right. I think it's all it is.
Brainiac Queen, yeah. Knowing that that's coming, right, and that this doesn't have that character in it, I'm like, okay, so how are we going to get there? And I want to see that develop. So, yeah, I'm into it.
What'd you think of the last page there with the League of Brainiacs? I don't know what that was.
More clones of guys that are really dangerous who will suddenly not be as dangerous.
Yeah. And how is this working? Is it the Nexus using Superman, right?
I think so. I think they're going to split that.
Okay. All right, so we'll probably be getting a lot of this quickly then.
Yeah, Superman 13.
Okay.
Yep. Pull.
Yeah, pull.
Yeah, it's a pull for me. I actually like this.
It's got a couple of tie-ins too. Green Lantern number 10 is a tie-in. Power Girl number 8 is a tie-in. Then we're getting a Superman House of Brainiac special, and that's part 2.5. And I guess we don't know what comes after that. And that'll probably change the status quo and maybe introduce the Brainiac Queen and then get us into the backside of this event. Okay.
So just a continuity question. I'm wondering if you guys know the answer to this. When did Jimmy Olsen start dating Silver Banshee?
Not that long ago.
Okay. Was it in a book I'm not reading? Because I'm reading Superman in Action Comics.
I think it was, it was PKJ maybe. I don't know. I know about it, but okay. I don't know when exactly it happened.
Okay.
Recently. In the broader scope.
Cole said, I really enjoyed this one. Rafa's art is so good. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, stellar.
Is Lois Lane. Come on.
Yeah. James Jones says, will you get all the tie-ins on Brainiac? No. No, I will not.
Not grabbing that Power Girl? You're reading Green Lantern, though, or you're picking up
Green Lantern. I'm purchasing Green Lantern, yes. I will not pick up Power Girl because I'm not already reading it, and everything else is going to be determined by my enjoyment of this event. Pretty much. Aaron's redemption comes next week with Batman Off-World's return. Huh. Well, that's been good. Off-World's been good. I've enjoyed it.
People have been buzzing about that one in the Discord, actually.
Yeah, it's good. It doesn't feel necessary, but I think that, you know, it's Jason Aaron doing Batman stuff. It's fun. You know, he's kicking ass. I've enjoyed it. I don't know if it's his redemption, though. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. Really appreciate you being here, spending your Thursday afternoon with us if you are here live. And if you're not, spending any amount of time with us. Thank you. Appreciate you. If you want to support the show, support your boys, Patreon.com/TheComicsPals is the absolute best way to do that. We're always giving you bang for your buck over there. I have two superhero/superhero nicknames to come up with for the show this Saturday. That's going to be a lot of fun. If you want to add to that, if you want your name added to that and you want to shout out every Saturday on our main show, sign up, join us on the Patreon side of things. There's a lot of other perks that you get. If you head on over to the Patreon page, you can check out everything. You can see everything that we are offering there. Even creating a free account is worthwhile because you get to nominate a book in the book club nomination process. So we appreciate everybody who does that. And I want to shout out our channel members over on YouTube.com as well. You guys are fantastic. Love to see you hanging out with us live in the chat. Speaking of votes, speaking of listener picks, listener nominations, you guys went above and beyond the call of duty. We asked you to break the record again for the votes in the listener pick poll on YouTube. Whoa. And you did it.
Absolutely, you did it, crushed.
And you crushed it. You went above and beyond. And I want to say thank you, because it is awesome that so many of you are actively engaging with us on these different platforms, be it YouTube, be it social, be it Discord. And you're influencing the show. Let me tell you something. Batman First Night, number 2, we would not be reading this if it was not for you guys. So I don't know whether to thank you or curse you, but for the fact that you were partaking in this experience with us, I do thank you. It is a lot of fun, even if I didn't have the most fun reading our next book. So the aforementioned Batman First Night, number 2, Dan Juergens on the words, on the script, Mike Perkins on the art, Mike Spicer on the colors, Mike and Mike, my favorite duo. Good candy, too. Letters by Simon Boland. Not a fan, Kale?
Mike and Ikes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Mike and Ike. Thank you.
Can't trick me. Uh-uh.
I love that candy, though. It's very good.
It's great candy. That's not the part I'm arguing.
Does it have flavor?
Fair enough.
I don't know what that tastes like. All right, whatever.
So the last issue left us with Batman in an electric chair. And to me, when I see someone in an electric chair getting shocked, I'm like, wow, they're dead.
Well, short series.
Right. Well, not so. Not even the electric chair can kill the Batman. And the book proceeds to spend the first like five pages, explaining to you how it is that Batman survived the electric chair. And, you know, I'm going to be honest. The first one had some, you know, it had some fun moments and things like that, but this is just not it. It's just not it. It's moving. I'll give it that. It's not necessarily slow. It's doing some things. But there are ancillary sequences that just don't feel necessary. You know, it's got Batman fighting the Monster Men, which is fine. We'll talk about the art in a moment. And we get this damn rabbi again.
Yeah.
All the beats from the first issue, literally down to the sequence and the scenery, are the same. What happened in the last issue? We got scenes in the police department, Batman fighting Monster Men, Bruce Wayne speaking to Julie Madison and her boyfriend in his mansion, and Batman speaking with the rabbi, and Batman in the electric chair. All of those things happen in the first issue, and they also happen in this one. Every single one.
Almost felt like a checklist, like a beat-for-beat checklist.
Yeah.
I strangely liked this one more than the first issue.
I think I did. I liked it more, but I still wasn't crazy about it.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I liked it more in the sense that I was able to read it in one sitting. but I didn't love it. Like what I like about it is I think the art is great. I think the Perkins and Spicer are doing some fun stuff. I think those Monster Men are gross. They got ground beef faces. It's gross. And I really like the angles that he picks for Batman, the way this cowl looks. And there's one of Batman lunging at somebody. It's from like the gloves onward that looks really good. And the purple and the gloves just really jumps out. So I like the art of things. But I'm not sure about like the story. It's kind of chugging along. I'm so tired of Batman origin retellings and plays on that. Like, it just doesn't spark joy in me anymore. Occasionally, like, what is the actress's name, Sean, in this?
Julie Madison.
Yeah, yeah. I liked her quippy nature, like, the way she's, you know, thrown out, you know, a different, what is it called? A pan-Atlantic accent sort of thing. there's like a another word that she throws out there. I'm like, oh, that's funny to me. But that loses its charm pretty quickly. Yeah, it's a fine book. But I don't think I would read this if I had the choice.
I was really disappointed by the art here. And it's not necessarily the figures themselves, but even though sometimes it's that, but Perkins chooses some really bizarre angles here. Like what, like how, like, look, all respect, Perkins is a brilliant artist, right? But on this single page here, where Batman is, you know, he's kicking one of the monster men, I guess, and he, you know, he gets on the scene. This doesn't strike me as, like, far be it for me to say what this should be, but I got to this page and I said, that just doesn't feel like the right angle for this. Like, it doesn't make Batman look cool or imposing, and it's almost hard to imagine this happening in real time. Like, if you really think about what you're looking at here, in real time, does this even make sense?
I think this Batman is purposely not imposing, though. Like, everyone questions him in this. Like, Gordon's like, dude, you're getting your ass kicked multiple times. Like, stop it and wisen up and take, you know, get a gun. So I think that's part of this version of Batman.
But what I'm saying is that this angle of attack doesn't look right. Like, I don't know if I can explain it well, but it just doesn't make sense. Look at where the kick landed versus where Batman's feet are versus how his body is laid out. It just looks odd.
Like, what's he doing there?
Yeah.
He's Mario stomping them. That's the only way I can describe it.
Even here, this top panel, the punch that he lays on that monster man, it's it just doesn't look right. I don't know.
Even like the facial work in that scene with Julie Madison where they're having tea or whatever is like wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's, I totally agree. It's like she has different faces all throughout.
Bruce has different faces.
Him too. Him too, yeah, absolutely. And I'm not sure what's going on there. I feel like I've enjoyed Perkins a lot more than this.
Yeah.
Fairly recently. So this feels like a departure. But Spicer's great. The colors are fantastic. You know, I'll never get tired of his coloring style. But if I have to read another conversation between Batman and a rabbi, like I just, come on.
Yeah. I just don't see the, especially, I don't see the reason for this second conversation.
Yeah.
First one, I was like, okay, yeah, he landed on the thing, fine. But this one's just like, well, why?
Yeah, just because. He went to go look for the rabbi.
And then he also reveals his identity, like, well, why?
Random.
Is it just because there's no Alfred in this world and he needs somebody? Is that like
That's
a,
the only thing I can figure out.
It's like the constant is that Batman has somebody to lean on. That's a good person, I guess. But that I'm pulling at strings here.
Yeah, like I get that this is definitely not supposed to be the exact same version of Bruce that we're used to. But I just feel like he's acting bizarre. And I don't know. I don't get it. I know that a lot of people have really enjoyed this book. But the dialogue feels way stilted and awkward and doesn't really flow. And I don't think this is Perkins' best. I just don't.
Is this Bruce supposed to feel different because this is the Bruce Wayne that existed as Batman before Batman was Batman and it was just the Detective Comics character?
Yeah.
That's the only reason I could have for it, because he's going to have a gun. Like, I know that it posits this at the end that, you know, he picks up a gun. But that old Detective Comics Batman had guns all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's just like an origin for that one and why he uses guns. It's because he just gets his ass kicked.
I mean, I think it's it feels like it's just a – they go out of their way this Jurgens goes out of his way to explain why Batman wouldn't want to use a gun. But then through the actions in the book, goes, "Oh, dude, you better have a gun." And then he's just like, "Oh, yeah, a gun. Great idea."
There's one point where Gordon looks at the reader, essentially, and says, "You need to protect yourself and get a gun." And I was like, "Oh, he's talking to me."
Oh, and it's like the 40, you know, the late 30s, the 40s. Like, yeah, okay, sure. I could see someone saying that. "Hey, bro, you got to get a gun." But I just, like, I don't know, man. This isn't it for me.
Yeah. This is a hard pass for me. I, like, how much is this comic book?
Oh, yeah, here we go.
$7? $6.99? You know, no way. This is frustrating, because I thought that the first issue set up something really cool, and I think this issue did everything the first one did again, but we already saw it, and you know, it doesn't even leave it in a place where I'm like, I gotta find out if Batman's gonna use a gun or not, because he's probably not. But if he does, I don't really care. What does it matter?
It's not that interesting of a concept. Like, even if you put a gun in the real Batman's hands, it's just like, well, fine. Like,
at least in that case, there would be consequences, and other characters would react to that in a meaningful way. Here, this is an alternate universe. This is not our Batman. So I don't really care what he does. He could throw bombs at people. He could drop nukes. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. And I don't care about this version of Bruce, so I'm not connected to his choices. I just don't feel like there's been enough effort to emotionally vest me in this character outside of the fact that he's Bruce Wayne, and inherently I care about the idea of Batman. But in terms of character work, there's been no character work for me to care about this version.
Yeah.
So yeah, pass.
Yeah. Sorry, chat. Me too. Pass.
Listeners, you did us dirty.
Don't do it again.
People in the chat seem to like it. So, you know, different strokes, different folks. But yeah, definitely a pass for me.
Well, they did us dirty. These folks. They did these folks dirty. Us folk. But, go ahead.
I was going to say, Uncaged says that it's been speculated that this was supposed to be a Jewish origin story for him. I guess him being Bruce, and perhaps editorial didn't want to go there.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, I hadn't heard that, but that could be the case, but I don't know Batman to be a religious character really at all. So the idea that they're going to make him Jewish here isn't like, okay. Is that a story beat? You know, like, that doesn't really connect on any material level. And just throwing a rabbi in the mix, you know, just to get that across, or just to get to that place, again, it just doesn't feel natural. Like, he goes back to the rabbi, but the dialogue doesn't justify him having that motivation. I guess because he has no one to talk to, but I don't know. I don't know. Dan says, Batman didn't have guns back in the day. That's a mistaken idea. He only used a gun once with silver bullets to kill a vampire. Other than that, he never used one. There was a preview image of him with one, but nothing in the stories themselves.
Yeah, I think I looked on Wikipedia, and he also used it to shoot, like, non-human things. But, yeah, pretty quickly phased out. I don't know why I have that stuck in my head, though. Am I thinking of the Shadow when I think of pulp Batman, maybe?
No, there are definitely images out there of purple-gloved Batman with, like, a, you know, the shoulder holster thing.
Yeah.
A pulpy style.
uncases other members of the Bat family are Jewish. Yeah, for sure. I think that's awesome. Like, if like that's totally cool. I'm not, I don't even, I have no critique against that. It's just the fact that I felt like it doesn't matter what kind of religious figure it was. It's just the fact that I didn't really feel like they really like made good use of it. It just, I don't know, didn't connect for me. I couldn't really get into it. But nothing's connecting with this, with for me, with this book right now. So, all right. I wanted to get into the poll, the listener pick poll, because we have a doozy this week. This is a big week coming up, and I really thought we should stack the deck. So, we have the aforementioned Batman Offworld, the good book that Aaron is doing at DC. That is at 7% right now. Avengers Twilight number 4 is at 18% right now. Wonder Woman number 8. She's back in the lion's den. Is at 36% of the vote. But World's Finest, number 26, allegedly the best DC comic right now, is at 39% of the vote so far.
Here we are sitting at 28 votes, which is 8 more than what's on the image at the moment.
I just refreshed it. So
okay. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I want to hear the Sovereign talk again. Let's do Wonder Woman number 8, guys. Let's review that one.
You know this is fucked up. When I voted for a Mr. Mixel Spittle Lick book and a Batmite book over Wonder Woman and the Avengers, I wasn't going to vote for Jason Aaron.
I voted Avengers on this one. That book's awesome. Avengers Twilight, I'm really loving it. But then again, World's Finest 25 was really good too, and I had a great time with that. So that's why it's not up to me. It's up to you guys. It's up to the listeners. What do you want us to read? Which book are you most excited about? I would be happy. Well, I wouldn't be happy reading any of these, let's be honest. But vote your heart. Vote for the book that you most want to hear us talk about, and the winner will be featured on the show just like First Night was. Atomic Hound says, "Hey, pals, fresh off the road for 2 weeks and so glad to be home. Welcome. Thank you for hanging out with us. We missed you in the chat, buddy. Glad to have you." Wave right back at you, Justin. Let's keep things rolling. Let's get into Ultimate X-Men number 2. Peach Momoko, the writer and artist at the head of the table of this whole thing. Script adaptation by Zach Davison and letters by Travis Lanham. This issue follows Hisako, as she meets a new character. She meets May Storm. This is May's first appearance in the body of a comic book. And it's really just sort of their adventure together. And they encounter once again who I believe to be the Shadow King, and they both sort of use their powers, and that's about it.
Yeah, I think this definitely confirms the Shadow King in this issue.
I think so, yeah.
I'm having trouble with this.
It came around, did you?
No, because on one hand, I do like the book. I really like the art style in it. I like the characterization, especially, you know, Maystorm versus Armor Hisako. There's a good dynamic there, but it just this isn't playing well to me in the normal issue sense. Like, this is the second issue, and the first issue did this too, where it just ends on like dialogue, not even a cliffhanger. It really feels like it's being adapted and being cut up from an actual script. That I'm not too much of a fan of. I think it's good. I think the craft is there, but I'm not sure it's reading well in traditional, you know, monthly superhero comic fashion.
You know what, this felt a bit like Primer to me. I wonder if, I don't know if it's Peach's style. I don't know if it's, maybe it's the adaptation not translating. Maybe it's the manga styling of it. But it feels like it's trying to aim, or maybe mistakenly aiming, at a younger audience. That's how it feels to me.
Some heavy themes for a younger audience.
I mean, like, I don't even know if it, like, the manga doesn't really make sense because, like, what is that? Those chapters are weekly, right? So, like, maybe if this is weekly, that would be more tolerable. But I don't know. It's the pacing is just off for me.
I'm done. I had my fun with the first one. I thought the first one was real good. I'm not even saying that this is bad, but I just don't think that there's just not enough here for me. Seeing Mei and Hisako talk about whatever, you know, and run around the abandoned school and stuff, like, I just don't really care. And a listener asked, after we reviewed the first issue, they asked on our Discord server, which you should join. And hello, Rufus, who just joined our Discord server. Welcome. Thank you for hanging out. We'll get to your question after this. But they asked, would you be reading this if it was not called Ultimate X-Men and it was called, you know, whatever, Hisako and Friends? And I said no. And that is absolutely true. And this issue confirmed for me that the Ultimate X-Men tag isn't enough to keep me reading, because that honestly feels like a bait and switch. Because regardless of what anyone says, X-Men books with the X-Men title in them, that means Xavier's men, right? That is about something very specific. And nothing resembling that is happening here. So yeah. I am out.
There's no X-Men here. There's no mutants here. There are people with powers, for sure. But there's no mutants here. There's nothing resembling the X-Men here. This is not an X-Men book. It's a good book. I'm fine with it. I even like it, but it's not an X-Men book.
And the thing is, the way it's the art means that the panels are very big, so there's not much that each page gets. So this book moves very quickly. But at the same time, because it takes up that much space, it kind of chugs along in terms of forward plot progression because things take up a lot of space. Which then makes me unsure if they'll ever actually tackle anything like the idea of mutants, you know, where do mutants come from? Like the whole history of it. I almost feel like this should have been tackled in another book to, I guess, settle what mutants are in this Ultimate Universe. Because we still don't know, you know, it's never been mentioned in any of the other books.
Well, yeah. And so what have we've read Spider-Man, Black Panther. Is that all we've read for the Ultimates other than this?
Yeah.
And then the Ultimate Invasion stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I think the thing is, we don't know what the status quo of the X-Men is. And I think we need to hear it from another book.
Yeah. There's just no way that you launch with this as your statement on the X-Men. My mind is boggling at that. Like, what about this two issues deep is supposed to tell me that we're going to get to a familiar place with the X-Men? Absolutely nothing. And if we're not, then okay, I guess, but I know that that's not something that I need.
Yeah.
And I love the X-Men. This isn't that. So even like my review of this book is like, it's hard to do because this isn't what I would normally, I don't read manga for a reason. Like, there's a reason I don't read it, because it's not for me. It doesn't connect with me. And so this issue doesn't change that. It doesn't make me like manga. And it's not a manga, it's a comic. They're the same thing, whatever. But the pace it's moving at doesn't work for me. I'm not invested in Hisako right now. And it just sort of feels thin. The best thing I can say about it is that the art's really good. Peach is obviously incredibly talented, and I think it looks fantastic.
It's funny. I think you and I, Sean, are coming at it from different spots, but resulting into the same outcome. Where, like, if this was a Peach Momoko number one, and you had a, it was like, hey, this is Peach's new book. Here's a random title for it that makes sense. I don't know, call it Hisako or whatever. I would almost be more interested in that because it's not X-Men, you know, and I don't have to worry about it, you know, bothering me that it's not the X-Men, because then it's just a Peach book, and I would want to read that.
Yeah. Even if it was Ultimate Armor. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Weird choice, but fine.
Yeah.
And it could have been anything because Peach, look, ultimately Peach is working on this because people love Peach's art and her books sell. So I don't think that it has to be called Ultimate X-Men to sell because she sells. So it could have been Ultimate Armor because that's what it is. And then let a more, a creator who's willing to go a more traditional route do that. Because to me, Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate Black Panther aren't 616. They feel different enough to be called Ultimate, but they still feel pretty much what you would expect those character stories to feel like.
Yeah.
And I don't know why anyone would expect anything different from the Ultimate line. This feels like a bait and switch for me. I am not enjoying this anymore. The first issue was really good. It was fresh and different. This one is just like, okay, this is really what it's going to be. Then I'm cool.
Man, you're not even making it to see Surge?
No, man, because it's Surge in name only. And I don't, you know, Surge is about to come back in the mainline universe. What do I need this for?
It's true, X-Force, yeah. It's still a pull for me, though. Like, even though I say all that, I'm still curious enough of what's happening in the story, and I like the art enough to want to keep reading it. I'm just a little, but I agree with you. I'm like, oh, why is this? Why is it called this? But I still like it. I also never liked the Ultimate X-Men characters. Like, I never liked the status quo of the Ultimate X-Men. I thought that was confusing and weird. And they just kill everyone off in Ultimatum anyway. So I have no real expectation or want for that brand. But yeah, I'll keep reading this.
Yeah, pass.
Pass, unfortunately.
I like it, but I'm here for the X-Men. That's not it.
Uncaged says, I didn't buy this. I just can't see at the end of it being super happy. I'm glad I read number one. That is exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
Whatever this ends up being, I mean, it could ultimately be great. And I'm not even saying that this isn't great for who it's for. I just know that I'm not that person. And I'm not going to feel good about continuing to read this. And I already had reservations, and it's only been what I didn't want it to be. So there's no reason for me to continue on. Style So Serious says this should be called something else, not X-Men. How does this world eventually merge with the other two titles? I'll give it a chance, but this is not X-Men.
Yep.
The one thing that Ultimate Invasion posited was that the Maker took away all the powers from the heroes, right? Or stopped them from becoming what they should have become. So Peter Parker doesn't get bit by a spider. Iron Man never makes the suit, stuff like that. How does that work for mutants? Like, this is what I would like to know about the Ultimate, you know, side of X-Men. Like, did he stop the mutant gene from being activated? I don't know.
Well, he didn't succeed in every instance because not everybody doesn't have their powers. So we don't really know. Because, like, Ultimate Black Panther has his powers, obviously, Thor, you know, like, all those people. So, like, we don't know how successful he ultimately was, right?
Ultimately was.
Yeah, we don't have answers to that. And I'm intrigued by that question, but I suspect that will unfold most meaningfully not here. So it's like, I don't even feel like I need to read this book to get that answer.
Which does suck, because I think if the mutants were something that the Maker tampered with, that could make him a real threat. That would be terrifying.
Yeah, there's something compelling about that. For sure. And I wish that they would even sort of seed that. Maybe they did, to Tyler's point, but it remains to be seen. James Jones said, I like that Peach is making this so different. I still want to see where it goes. I think it will get there, but I do like manga, so that helps me. Look, the sales on this book were great for issue one. We'll see what they look like for issue two. Issue one sales for anything are always a little bit, you know, because of speculators and things like that. But ultimately, you and us and the people that buy this will decide if this is valuable or not. And if it continues to be purchased at the rate that it was for issue one, that says to Marvel, hey, we want this. And that's great. People being happy with the books they're reading is good. Cole says, I'm not bothered about it not being too X-Men enough. I'm happy this is the book that goes super left and unfamiliar. It's been a breath of fresh air for Marvel.
Hey, that's true. It's just not, you know, it's not even that it's not X-Men enough. It's just, it's not X-Men. It's just not.
Yeah. Well, Resurrection of Magneto is very X-Men.
Oh.
Very, very X-Men. Written by Al Ewing, with art by Luciano Vecchio, colors by David Curiel and Jesus Abertov, letters by Joe Subino. And this is now Magneto in all of his glory. Essentially, the entire issue is dedicated to the statement on the kind of man that he intends to be. And a reflection upon the mistakes that he has made in his distant past, but also not his, also his not so distant past, and kind of a re-explanation of who he is and who he wants to be going forward. And it does that through some great art. But it's a more straightforward comic than the prior Resurrection issues, which I think makes sense, given that he's now in the physical living world. I thought this was great. This was my pick of the week.
Pick of the week. Yeah, Christian on Cage 2, pick of the week.
Yeah, it was mine too.
Hell yeah. Oh, I love this book.
I thought this was a lot more straightforward than the other ones, but it was still good.
But I think it's a synthesis of everything that's happened in the Resurrection title. You know, I think it's, you know, like we've said, this is a real exploration of what Magneto is in totality. And frankly, it's made me a big fan of Magneto.
Yep.
And not only that, it's also who he's going to be as well.
Yep.
I know, like, there was that speculation or worry from people. I don't know about us, but you know, with the reboot coming up, or the relaunch rather, that he would go back to being a more villain-esque Magneto, to set him at square one for whatever the MCU wants to do going forward. And it's not that. It's clear they're not doing that. This is more, like Kel said, it's a synthesization. I don't think I pronounced that right. But of every aspect of Magneto. There's that one bit where he has the three different helmets around him. And there's like the black helmet, which is during like, it's like pre-Axis, post-AVX Magneto, who was like vengeance driven, you know. That's when he kills Red Skull, hard, like graphically. And then there's the white helmet, which is more of his Krakoa suit, which is like hope as well. And he chooses neither of them. He chooses the red and purple one, which is like the middle ground for him, because he is both of those things at once. And I really like that bit of him. He's like, he is the ruthless protector of mutant kind, but he also has hope for everything at the same time.
Not only does he choose the red one, but he morphs the red one too. Like, he takes little elements from both the white and black helmets and, you know, flares it up in the red one. which I think is a great, again, synthesis of who he has been into who he's going to be. I think you're muted, Sean.
Oh, I don't know how that happened. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this era is ending. But my hope is that what Al does here and what he establishes is carried forward. And I think it will be, because I think Magneto is a character that people really adore and love. And he's not going to be absent from anything related to the X-Men going forward. And I think it's pretty clear who they want him to be. They want him to be the other side of the coin for Charles, but not in an antagonistic sense. Almost like they're the same person in a way. And I think Onslaught is a weirdly good representation of that, theoretically. The fact that Charles is a bit more passive in his approach to the protection of mutant kind, and Magneto is more willing to get the job done and get his hands dirty. But that they both want the same thing. And Magneto is no longer going to stand in the way of mutant progress. But that doesn't mean that blood can't be shed if it's in defense of mutant kind.
And that's even breaking a rule of Krakoa. So that's him even sort of ditching the rule set of Krakoa, because it's almost like he realizes it's gone at this point.
Yeah.
And that scene with that Team One or whatever, Team Zero, or the Orcus agents, where he realizes what he needs to do and he does it. Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really awesome sequence. Go ahead.
I was reading another review right after I finished this, just because it happened to come up. I don't know, whatever I was doing. And they mentioned, like, the restraint that the artist shows here. Like, in not showing these guards getting completely crumpled all at once, you know, and not leaning into the brutality of that, but just like using that image and the power of it. Just incredible.
Which is a reflection of Magneto's current stance too.
Yeah. Yeah, he closes his eyes for that whole thing.
Yeah.
Magneto's
a top 10 character for me. I've loved Magneto for years. So this is, I'm cool to see.
You know what I thought of as I was reading this was your Magneto helmet.
Yeah, it's on display in the
I went, damn, am I going to have to get a Magneto helmet?
I'll message you when they're on sale again. Like, I even have a Herman Peralta Magneto commission, like, right above my desk. Like, I look at him often. So, yeah, this is cool. And we know he's leading the X-Men, so he kind of has to be a good guy still. So,
art's great. Luciano does a tremendous job bringing this to life. Magneto, you know, looks really cool. He does look younger, which I was a little bit thrown by. I don't really like that. But I guess the idea is that he's revitalized. Mm-hmm. So, sure. Is this the last issue?
I believe so, yeah.
Think so.
Yeah.
The next up page that's in this shows, I think, Fall of the House of X as the next issue, technically. So, yeah, this is the end of Ewing's run on X-Men, essentially.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done. I think in terms of, you know, if we were to rank the writer's side of things from the Krakoan era, I mean, I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but I would certainly say Hickman and then Ewing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I might even put forward the conversation. I don't know if it would come out that Ewing would be on top, but I would put forward the conversation that Ewing might fare better.
I might agree with that, Kale, actually, just in terms of the amount, the output, and the consistency with it.
And the fact that he stayed on it.
Yeah, that kind of consistency as well, yeah. But like even in this issue, like he still kind of sums up Storm's whole deal.
Yeah.
Like in a couple words here and in showing her actions. And then he even like does the alleying thing. Was like, well, yeah, I did write Ultimates, you know, 5-7 years ago. I still want to, you know, touch on, you know, Blue Marvel and his, you know, hate for the Avengers and stuff like that. But like he's so good at knowing the stuff that he wrote even years ago and tying that in, even in simple ways, that, man, this is good stuff. It feels like a good, not only a good synthesis of Magneto, but a good synthesis of what he was doing on these X-Men books.
Yeah, Al Ewing, one of the best writers of this generation for sure. And thanks to him for all the great work he did in Krakoa. I truly think I would have had to tap out if it wasn't for the fact that Al had some good stuff happening between X-Men Red. And then, of course, this now, it's been amazing.
I did not think there was anything left for me in Krakoa until this book.
There wasn't. You were at Araco instead.
Well, that's true. Maybe that's what it was. I was with Magneto in the grave and this brought me back.
Yeah, we already said it. Pick of the week. It's a great, great book. Dan asked if this is the kind of thing that can be read on its own. I think that it absolutely is. You probably need to have an affinity for these characters, but if you don't, Al does enough work in the first issue to sort of speed you up on what you kind of need to know about, like, Magneto and where he's at and his relationship with Storm and those kind of things, which is all done very well and creatively. And I think if you just want to read a really great story featuring some X-Men characters, this is about as good as it gets in the non-Hickman Krakoan era.
Yeah.
Easy pick of the week.
Easy trade pull, too. I'm going to trade weight the hell out of this.
Yeah, I agree.
This will be a great trade to have. Can I trade this in for Ten of Swords? Is that possible?
You have an extra, right?
No, I have an extra Inferno.
Inferno, yes.
Yeah.
No, Inferno was good, though.
I don't know. What do you mean, can you trade it in? I don't understand.
Well, because X of Swords sucked and Resurrection is great, so I would love to be able to trade in what I bought that I don't want to own for something that I would like to own.
Well, definitely not in Midtown, ever since, even after they dropped their discount. So, yeah, they're not giving you that.
Yeah. We had a question from Rufus. What's your thoughts on Prometheus? Haven't seen him being utilized that much on Batman comics. I wanted to touch on this because Rufus is not a name that I've seen comment before, but I don't think I know who Prometheus is. Like, I cannot think of who that is.
That's a cry for justice villain.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, the man.
Purple helmet with like almost looks like the knight armor. Yeah.
That was rough. That was a rough book, but I don't know where Prometheus has been. Maybe on ice because of that event.
Throw him on a Suicide Squad team. Let him build character there. And if you kill him, you kill him. That's how I feel.
Style So Serious says, not going to let you shade Gillen. Man, listen. Come on now. You can't tell me that what is happening in Rise of the Powers of 10 is hitting on the same level as this, right? Like, we're not trying to get that off, are we? I feel like since Al touched down in the X-Men books, he's been outpacing everybody creatively. And maybe it's because he had less responsibility. Maybe because of the fact that they sent him off to space to do S.W.O.R.D. and do X-Men Red, and he didn't have to deal with the main, like, Earth stuff, allowed him to cook a little bit more his way. I could grant you that. But ever since Immortal X-Men went into the White Hot Room, and ever since the start of Sins of Sinister.
Yep.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I was like, especially after the the Eternals event. Like, okay, I'm a little burned out on that, but they just got through an event. Cool. We'll get back to normal stuff here.
Yeah.
And then we didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, we never got back to a place that felt familiar or like I cared about it, quite frankly. White Hot Room I was into for a little bit, but
even like before the X-Men Red stuff, wasn't he doing Sword?
Yeah, I mentioned that.
Yeah.
Sword was awesome.
And like, but like Sword tied into then his previous Guardians of the Galaxy run, which tied into his ultimate. Like, he's linking a chain throughout everything. That is impressive. And it kind of rewards you for reading all of his books.
Yeah. Aaron Reese said Inferno was peak. Sadly, Mora got the bad end of the stick after. I love Inferno. I love it so much I got two copies, apparently. It's Ten of Swords that I'm not that big of a fan of. Let's see how much we liked Transformers number 7. Daniel Warren Johnson on the words only, transitioning away from the art. He's now joined by George Corona with colors by Mike Spicer.
George Corona.
A double Mike Spicer week. And Russ Wooten on the letters. Now, if I hadn't read this comic book, let's say I hadn't read it at all, this is what I would say happened. I would say that there was a fight between the Decepticons and the Autobots. I would say that there was some kind of an altercation, be it verbal or otherwise, between Starscream and another Decepticon about who should lead them, in which he silences someone before they say the name of Megatron. I would say that there is probably going to be a conversation between an Autobot and a human that is meant to tug at your heartstrings. And I would say that at some point, Optimus is going to look really cool or say something really cool. And that's it. I have just described to you 1 through 7 of Transformers. You are welcome.
Yeah,
I'm liking this book. I don't understand. This is fun for me. The almost gladiatorial, the Warcraft term I know is Makgara. It's the orcs when they fight each other for leadership. The Decepticons do here with Starscream and Soundwave being, spoiler, the leader of the Decepticons now. Love that shit. Soundwave's awesome. I don't know. Like, yes, Sean, I agree with what you said. But I think it's good. Like, just because it is that doesn't mean it's not good.
I mean, it's good in the way that a Saturday morning cartoon is good to me.
That's Transformers. Like,
yeah, and I just said that it's not working for me. So like, I don't think that, like, I don't want to read a comic where the exact same thing happens in every issue. And I had fun with it for the first half of the first arc, but it's too much. And I like, even the reviews we do are the same because there's nothing to say. Nothing happens. It's the same things that happen in every issue. How can you have something new to say when the same thing happens?
Well, I think the we're adding the Cybertron part of it. Finally, we're getting a bit of that shown at the beginning here, the kind of cold open. So I'm curious how that concurrently what's happening in Cybertron ties into what happens here. But it's a morsel. It is a Costco sampler piece of that.
I like the fight between Starscream and Soundwave. That was a cool moment. And I like that Starscream doesn't manage to win this. Like, he is, you know, not cut out for this. He's not cut out for leadership. He's not cut out for a gladiator fight. Not that type of dude.
The cover really swerves you.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Dow saying something incredibly on point. Thank you, Dow, so much. He says, like the stream. They say, like the stream. And I completely agree with that. If you're having fun hanging out with us, give the old stream a like there. You're having a good time.
I liked this issue. I was very down on 2 through 6 of DWJ's run, you know, where he was on Art and the previous run. I felt like this gave him maybe a little bit of room to stretch his legs. And I say that specifically because Soundwave is taking over the Decepticons. I think that's a weird off-the-wall choice that I think is supposed to sort of signal a new regime, you know, a new path forward. I think you're right in that with the Autobots, it's going to be a lot of the same. Optimus is going to pose and he's going to, you know, talk about humanity. And then we're going to have the conflict with the humans that, you know, is all very samey, as it always is. But I think what's going on with the Decepticons could be really interesting. It really felt like there was more momentum with this issue than the previous six.
Yo, can I ask you something?
Okay.
So what about Soundwave taking over as the leader of the Decepticons is interesting to you from the perspective of a person who has read issues 1 through 7 and nothing more?
Well, that much I can't give you. If you, the thing I would say is, you know, if you think about the Transformers as, you know, they're represented by their cars and how they function in sort of Transformer society in that visual language they give you, Starscream is a jet. Soundwave is a cassette tape. The cassette tape is not the likely candidate to lead the bad guys.
And not only that, I think in the context of the story that he was just the good soldier who did everything that was told for him to do. Like, Soundwave gets his butt kicked throughout most of this. And it's just him realizing, like, no, even though that guy claimed he was the leader, he's not. And you got to take it into your own hands situation. And I think historically, too, Soundwave has been a big character in the comics. Like, the Marvel Transformers comics, he was pretty big.
Okay, well, forget everything I said then.
I don't know if he ever led, but yeah. I did like the one weird bit in the middle here where Optimus is driving and he has a bit of a That's So Raven flashback moment where he's seeing is his name Spike, the kid? He's seeing the human kid as a baby, which is leading me to believe that his dad might have merged into him when he went into the Allspark.
Yeah,
and he's kind of gaining his... So it's going to be a more human Optimus once they merge, and it's still his dad. There's a weird thing going on there. It's a bit like Jack Frost. Like, his dad's soul is now in this other thing.
Which is exactly what we need. Optimus relating even more to humanity.
Well, he's going to like drinking Coors now.
Wow.
We haven't talked about the art. What do you think of the art? With the art change, because I know we're all DWJ fans with terms of art, but I really dug this.
Yeah, I like especially what really got me was the anguish on RC's face at the end of the cold open there. I thought George Corona did a great job showing that.
For me, it was the RC stuff with the Katie, is it? Carly. And when they're, you know, doing that, like, target practice with a gun, you know, and then, you know, RC accidentally blows something up, but because she's a good shot. But I think there's a cartoonier aspect to Corona's art that it feels better for me. And he does a little more tighter panels in some points, too. A little more gets to be on the screen. I know Daniel Warren Johnson does a lot of, you know, big moments.
Yeah.
But that could take up a good part of a page. So there's a lot more chunkiness to what's displayed on the page here with Corona on art.
I'm going to miss the wrestling moves. And Daniel Warren Johnson has such a flair and style to him that I definitely felt was lacking in this issue from a visual standpoint. But one thing that I did sort of like, Cole also mentions in the chat, which is that it was easier to understand the scale and differentiate the characters. Up until now, I couldn't have told you who Soundwave was. I could not have picked that Decepticon out of a lineup. Now I can. And I feel like a lot of that is due to, A, the fact that there are less Transformers being featured in this particular issue, but also B, the scale and scope, it's easier to point people out. He really stood out in this issue, and I think the lettering also did a great job of helping me along with that. I would say pass. And it's not because I didn't like this issue, because I did ultimately, but it's because I am not going to keep buying a comic book where the exact same thing happens in every issue. I feel like I got the point in the first six. And as much as I think the Transformers are super cool, there's just nothing of material here for me. Nothing to think about. There's nothing to really grip with, connect to. I just don't feel it. And so, yeah, for that reason, I would have to pass.
It's a pull for me. This was close to pick of the week, but then Magneto was just too good.
Yeah. Yeah, Magneto was fantastic. I'm going to pull on this one because it did more for me in this issue than the previous five. So I'm willing to see where the next one goes. Maybe even the one after that. But it's on pretty thin ice.
I'm curious if you guys listening want us to continue reading Transformers. I felt like, you know, we got to read the first issue of the new arc with the new artist and see how that works. But beyond that, do you care about hearing us talk Transformers? Are you into it?
I'm genuinely glad we read this because I think writing Daniel Warren Johnson has pulled off something different than writing an art Daniel Warren Johnson.
What do you think he did differently?
Well, just in that there's locomotion here, or it feels like there's locomotion. Hmm. You know, it feels like there's room. He's not doing absolutely everything.
Sure. It's like, dude, I genuinely want to see Megatron. Like, I'm excited for that to happen.
Yeah.
And it's not that I think it needs to get there already. It's just that I feel like the road hasn't been as interesting as what I know the outcome will be.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm struggling with right now.
This book is strangely making me look into Transformers more. Like, I'm on wikis now. Like, who the hell is Huffer? Like, I'm like, who is this fella? That's a dumb name. And like the one that looks like RC at the beginning, it turns out not RC. It's someone else. So it's making me like Transformers lore, or at least be interested in it, which is a sentence I never thought I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that. I can see that for sure. I would love it if there was a Transformers cartoon right now that but it's just like I can't wrap my head around the idea that nothing happens. And maybe if I watched Transformers as a kid, I'd feel differently. But the fact that it's sort of like Power Rangers, where it's just like every episode is just some new dude to get beat down and they essentially have the same beats. But I watched that when I was a kid. Would I watch a new season of Power Rangers right now? No, I would not. So I think that I'm just not here for this because I'm not here for that style of storytelling anymore. But I can definitely say that this is interesting. Like, I like the first movie. The first movie was hot shit, but I don't like any of the other ones because they told the story in the first one. That's kind of where I'm at. Philosopher King laughing at Transformers lore. James Jones says, I don't read Transformers, but I do like hearing about books I'm not reading. I might give it a chance later.
Is PK there? Is he laughing or crying?
Oh,
it looks like crying to me.
Well, isn't that crying laughing?
I
don't know
crying,
how
laughing,
to use emojis properly, I guess. I thought that was like crying laugh.
There are two, yeah, that are very similar. Guys, I don't know how to make a poll, and Marco's not here.
Yeah.
So if you want us to keep reading it, just shout about it.
I'll make a poll.
Okay, Sean will do it.
Yeah. So, Kale froze there. Do you see that, Tyler?
Yeah, he froze for me too.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So I wanted to talk about, as I get this poll up, I went to WrestleMania. I went to WrestleMania this weekend. And, you know, I don't know how many of you guys are wrestling fans, but I've talked about my wrestling fandom a lot here on the show. And I got to go to WrestleMania this year. I was super excited. I had an incredible time. So it's WrestleMania 40, right? This is 40 years of WrestleMania. Okay. It's spread out across two nights, Saturday and Sunday in Philadelphia at the Lincoln Field Arena, whatever, 70 plus thousand people they got into that venue. And I can't even tell you, if you've never been in a crowd that full before, it is a wild experience. It really is. It's just so many people. And the poll should have just gone up now. So please do get your votes in if you want us to continue reading Transformers. But they got so many people in there, and it feels like Comic-Con in the sense that there are all these people there to celebrate the same thing. Like, everybody there loves what you love. And they don't just love wrestling. They love WWE. So you're not going to get those, you know, people who love another company coming and yelling dumb stuff. It's not, you know, it's not like that. Everybody there loves WWE. So The Rock was there. The Rock wrestled on night one. And I mean, it felt like the year 2002 again. It felt like 20 years ago. This guy comes out. The crowd erupted. They lost their minds. The Rock is arguably the greatest entertainer of all time. He's one of them because he dominated film, right?
Like
Black
it or not.
Adam aside.
Yeah.
Black Adam. The hierarchy didn't change over there, but it certainly did in WWE when he came back. He took the company by storm, and he's definitely had a hand in making wrestling hot again.
And Sean, were you also expecting him to not be the most ring ready? Because he surprised the hell out of me.
So I saw The Rock's last match when he fought Cena in New York in 2013. And he looked bad. It didn't work. He got notoriously got injured during that match, but he just didn't look good. He looked gassed. He looked tired. And even the televised matches that we had seen just didn't look the best. So I was like, I hope we don't get that version of The Rock again. But they did. They protected him. They put him in a tag team match. It was The Rock and Roman Reigns, who, for those of you who don't know, Roman Reigns is like the big boss. Like, if you can imagine a big bad, the way Thanos was the big bad for the MCU for the first three phases or whatever, Roman Reigns is that. He's been the champion for the last 3 years. And no one has been able to beat him. So, and he's The Rock's cousin for real, in real life. They're actually related. They're part of the same Samoan family. So they teamed up to face Cody Rhodes, who is like Luke Skywalker, or he's like, you know, take your pick of main character guy, right? He's the hero of the WWE. Roman's the big villain. Cody's the big hero. And he teamed up with Seth Rollins. I'm not going to get into all the history. There's a lot to it. But needless to say, Seth Rollins and Roman have a lot of history together. And Cody and Seth teamed up to take them down. The Bloodline has had a stranglehold on the WWE for 3 years. And it's time to take them down. So it's this larger-than-life moment where The Rock and Roman are two icons. They go square up with Cody and Seth. and it was incredible to watch. It was cold as shit. It was cold, very cold in Philly on night one.
You had a lot of questions about the weather.
It was like 42 degrees. Chat. Yeah.
It was, I was freezing my balls off, okay? And I think, I haven't watched it back, so I don't know how the crowd came across, but if it came across badly, I'll tell you two things. One, we were all cold. Everybody was talking about it. And two, I think that the night one product, the night one matches, just weren't quite as exciting as night two. But the main event, go ahead, Kale.
So this Rock fight match, yeah. Is that day one or day two?
So that's day one. That actually closed out the first night, this tag team match.
Right, okay.
And that's when the crowd got up. When the crowd got up. I don't even know how I sound this good because my voice has been an absolute wreck all week because of night one and night two. The Rock and Roman Reigns are so popular that when The Rock came out and when Roman came out, almost the entire crowd was standing up and they put their ones in the air, which represents the bloodline. So these people had the audience in a thrall. They were booing the good guys. They were booing Cody Rhodes. That's how big of a deal this was. And The Rock beat Cody right in the middle of the ring. Beat him clean, pinned him, and frankly set a lot of the crowd home happy. For me, I said no. Tomorrow night, the main event of the next night was Cody versus Roman one-on-one. I said Cody's got to go and put his foot in Roman's ass. Night two was special. This was the greatest night of wrestling that I have ever been a part of. Top to bottom, I was so happy. It was incredible. They delivered the first match. Those of you who watched it, you know Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre and CM Punk's involvement and Damian Priest. He has this Money in the Bank, which gives you like a championship match shot anywhere, anytime. And he cashed it in at the most opportune moment, getting Drew McIntyre back, making him look goofy. It was so much fun. Phenomenal night overall. The finale, Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns. 3 years the champion, 1,316 days, I believe, was the final tally of Roman Reigns' championship reign. And it took, look, The Rock came out to help Roman Reigns. The rest of the bloodline came out. It took a returning John Cena. And when John Cena came out, the crowd's energy was huge. People popped. They cheered. They chanted. Everybody was so excited. And then The Rock came out and took out John Cena. And you knew that that glass was going to shatter and Stone Cold Steve Austin was going to come out and save the day and stun The Rock and that Cody would win. You just knew. But that didn't happen. That did not happen. Instead, we heard the gong. The gong that signifies the return of The Undertaker. And when I tell you that 70,000 people got out of their seats and erupted in cheers as the entire arena went black.
Yeah.
And then when the lights came back on, in the middle of the fucking ring is The Undertaker. And he takes The Rock out. And then the gong goes off again and the lights go dark and they're gone. And then it's just Roman and Cody. And then Seth Rollins gets in the mix and Roman Reigns has a chair and he has a moment to choose between hitting Cody, who is his actual opponent in the match, and hitting Seth, who he has 10 years of history with. And he leans into his ego and he leans into revenge and he hits Seth in the back with a chair. And right then, Cody grabs him, hits him with his finishing move, and after 3 years and 1,316 days, the reign of Roman ends. And Cody Rhodes became the champion of the world in a moment that was so exciting and so beautiful that it brought this wrestling fan to tears. I had the time of my life. It was an epic show.
Wow.
Man, I got bummed that Mark Calloway showed up.
What are you gonna do? What are you
Like,
gonna
just put
do?
the hat on. Like, he could have put the hat on. Like,
I didn't even know the Undertaker still did stuff.
He has a
I
one-man
played him.
show.
The what I know about wrestling comes from a Super Nintendo game from like 1992,
Sure.
where I played the Undertaker.
Not to ruin the Undertaker for you, Cal, but right now he's doing YouTube content with reaction thumbnails.
Hey, let me ask you something. Why would you think that would ruin him for me?
Oh man.
Sean, was there a match highlight for you? Obviously the Cody one, that overbooked in the best way possible match, but like any other ones?
I really had a lot of fun with Drew and Seth. It's hard when you're at a live event because you don't have the storytelling of the commentators. You don't have the angles, the camera angles that build tension and everything else. So I don't really know what other people thought were great matches. And then also, like, you're paying attention to the crowd. You're yelling shit out. People are yelling at you. So it's like more of a vibe and a feeling. But I would say that Drew and Seth stood out. And Seth, or I'm sorry, Sammy and Gunther.
Yeah, Sammy Gunther was definitely the highlight of night one for me in terms of like match, like wrestling match. Did the Jay versus Jimmy Yeet versus No Yeet match, was that also underwhelming for you live?
That was horrible.
Okay, good. That was a bad match.
But what was sick as fuck was when they were having the Cody Roman match and Jimmy came out and Jay said, "No, you're not getting involved with this," and speared his own brother off of the entire stage into oblivion because we never saw those motherfuckers again.
So it's funny for me. I had WrestleMania over at my friend's house the second night, but the first night I went over to my other friend's house and they had never seen a WrestleMania before. So this was their first WrestleMania. We made like a whole bunch of dips and stuff. Surprising no one, Jade Cargill was everyone was a fan of Jade Cargill.
Absolutely.
I mean, I was hanging out with lesbians too, so that probably explains it. But yeah, I think the Sammy was a big pop. Everyone liked Samuel. I think one of my friends was like, "Oh, this guy is ska music. He must be good." I'm like, "Oh, okay. I guess that does track." Yeah. But The Rock is something else. His entrance, although that People's Championship. That's like the controller you give to your brother after you unplugged it, so he can play a game with you.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah, it was
Why
good
have a
though.
belt?
Best WrestleMania I've watched in a long time. Long time.
Absolutely. Comic Boom said, "Did Dwayne Johnson's wrestling possess verisimilitude? Well scripted, was the art presentation amazing?" I assume yes all around. Yes, absolutely. I give it high grades. I would pull and I would say pick of the week. Yeah, absolutely. Even Mrs. Hound laughed at it was the greatest night of wrestling I've been involved in. Dude, it really was. I started going to wrestling shows when I was 18. And in the 15 intervening years, this was certainly the best event I've been to. I've been to some monumental shows, but unfortunately, WrestleManias aren't that good a lot of the time. And this one actually delivered, so I was pleasantly surprised. Good, by the way, to see all of you in the chat that actually know wrestling or are wrestling fans and are hanging out for this conversation. I appreciate you guys. I know we've got a little subsection of wrestling fans.
Sean, do you go to like the side WWE stuff, like the World or whatever, like the event center they have, like the shop and stuff?
I wasn't able to this year because my girlfriend had things that she wanted to do in Philly, and I mean, I was getting what I wanted, so
Sure.
I far be it from me to tell her she can't have what she wants. So we weren't able to get to that. Yeah, can you imagine if they'd stuck with Rock versus Roman? Yeah, that would have been god awful. God awful. Sean turned into a Cody crybaby. You know what, Philosopher King? You are goddamn right. I did, okay? It was a watershed moment. You gotta understand something. Like, this was a fucking Avengers Endgame type of ending. On Sunday night. And I'm a wrestling fan of almost 30 years. So You throw Stone Cold, well, they didn't get him, but you throw The Rock, you throw John Cena, you throw The Undertaker, you know, it's just so impactful, you know? It's just so big. It's like larger than life.
I mean, even to have The Undertaker for that, for that, for what you just described, like that, that's cool. That yeah. got me. That popped.
I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that because it really is that cool. And, you know, not everybody likes wrestling. A lot of people fell off with wrestling when they were young or maybe not never got into it. And a lot of people this weekend were saying things like, oh, I don't even understand why people watch wrestling. Don't you realize it's fake? Well, douchebag, do you watch movies? Do you watch television shows? Do you, you know, for what we do here, do you read comic yeah. books? Like, all of these things are essentially fake, but you're watching it for the story and, you know, the in this case, the athleticism, all of those things are real.
It's myth and athleticism is what it is. It's just you're watching yeah. a myth story. Although I did see a TikTok or something. Drewski was in the front row right behind commentary. And Gargano hits, I think it was like Pete Dunne with a tornado, like a DDT through a table. And Drewski's just like, now that's cap. Don't you realize that's fake? Like, and I'm like, all right. Yes, but that still hurts.
Yeah. So as good of a mania as I had a terrible time getting back home. Long story short, I got a flat tire.
Ooh.
And I was on Yikes. The highway, and that was a disaster. I was there for 3.5 hours. And now I'm dealing with Avis. So not a fun finale, but overall my weekend was stellar. And I encourage anybody who is a wrestling fan to one day save up your shekels and pennies and make sure that you get to WrestleMania. I don't care if it takes you all year to save up. It is worth it. I truly believe that as a wrestling fan, you need to go to WrestleMania. Just do. Okay. You guys know how we like to end things around these parts. I still managed to get my stack a day late, but I got it. I got my
dollar short.
I wish it was a dollar short. I do. I wish it was a few dollars short. I wish it was $6.99 short. You all that made us read Batman the first night. So if you've not been here before, this stack is my stack, my weekly comic stack, and I have a problem where I buy way too many comics. So you guys get to tell us how many you think I bought this week, and the person who gets the closest without going over wins the game. And nowadays we give away Marvel comic codes to the winners. This week, all the Marvel books that I bought are available. So whichever one you would like, if you win, just reach out to me somehow, some way, and we will get that to you. So let's get those votes in or those guesses in. What do you? How many books do you guys think I picked up this week?
I'm gonna go with 14. While,
you said 14?
14, yeah.
Nice. Sean, you want to close that poll real quick?
Yeah.
We're getting those numbers in.
Yeah. We'll do that now. So I'm gonna end the poll, and the final result is 61% say yes.
There you go.
So we will be reviewing Transformers.
So we got Tyler with 14. He said Philosopher King on 12. James Jones, perennial winner so far, says 17 for the stack. Mm. So we'll see how that goes. We've
if
got
he wins again,
Dan with
questions.
15. Hound says 13. Justin says 9. Uncaged says 14. And Rami says 14. I'm going to say, I'm going to split the difference just a little bit. I'm going to say 16.
Sweet 16.
16 candles, baby. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we know about the 5 we read for the show. We know about 5. That.
Whoa, Dow says 23.
What? Look.
There's precedent. Don't even act. There's precedent.
You know what? I'm not even going to say anything. I won't. I'll just get to the count here. So Green Lantern number 10.
So there's 5. Okay, so 6. Let's go.
Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. Only one issue left of this is going to make a nice trade. I think everybody should buy this. Book's great. Napalm Lullaby number 2. I'm very excited to dive into this. I wish I had had time to get to it before the show because I would love to tell you guys how good or not it is. But I will be reading that. Fantastic Four number 19.
Great cover.
Probably pretty good.
Great cover. Could yeah. be good. Who knows?
Could be good.
Invincible Iron Man number 17. Could also be good. Miss Marvel Mutant Menace number 2. I didn't finish the first mini that featured Miss Marvel from, you know, a few months ago. Have I started this one? Obviously not. The Amazing Spider-Man number 47. I like this cover. It's a good cover.
My boy's on that cover. Back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the Ben Reilly fan club here.
47 issue Wolverine, issue 47 of Wolverine. This is Sabretooth War part 7. Wow, we're only at part 7.
Only.
I thought it was past that number for some reason. I also bought cover of the week. Cover of the week, bar none.
Before you show it, Tyler, what do you think's on it?
Carnage.
I think it's a redhead.
Mm.
Well, Kale's right. It is X-Men 97 Jean Grey number 2.
Did not know
with a phenomenal Jean Grey drawing. It's just of her head, but the angle's great. It's got obviously her red hair. I want to credit the cover artist for
David
this.
Mack.
That's what I was going to say. It looks like David Mack.
Yeah.
David Mack.
Yeah. You didn't David pick up the Mack. First issue.
Sure did.
No, I don't. Did you?
I sure absolutely definitely did.
Maybe.
I'm 100% sure.
Dan says Carnage is a redhead. Hey, you got me there.
Yeah.
Great point.
Yeah.
That's
close.
That is actually very true. So what was that number?
Is that it? I got 14.
14. 14. You might want to
double check that, but I got 14.
I guessed 14. So
wow.
2 weeks in a row, baby. I'm learning.
Yeah, 14.
14.
We had three winners.
Yeah, I think Tyler, we got Uncaged and Rami this week.
Wow. And okay.
James overshot.
Yeah, James. Yeah, those higher numbers were working for James, but this was a weak for me. There weren't. I was surprised by the amount of books that I was interested in. I didn't buy Carnage this week. I decided to drop it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's growth.
Yeah.
See, I had assumed Carnage you were still picking up, but thankfully.
Wow.
What I counted Carnage, I didn't take into account X-Men 97. So,
it balanced out. Yeah.
One head for another.
Dan says you should do two counts, one for the number of books in the stack, and then the second for how many you've actually read.
Well, it would always be, you know, pretty much whatever we read for the show, and maybe one or two additional. It's just we already have to read at least 5 books. Then fitting what I want to read on top of that can be tricky that very week.
Yeah.
By the way, I was pleasantly surprised at Outsider 6 this week. That's what Atomic Hound says. We read the first one for the show and I couldn't continue.
I like that book.
Dude, your discussion on Outsiders, because I was off on the show. I wasn't on that episode. Made me not read that book.
Hey, and maybe that's maybe you should read it. Maybe you would enjoy it. But like I know for me, there just wasn't a lot there.
Yeah,
unfortunately. All right. The next time we will be live with you is this Saturday at 10:15 a.m. Eastern. We're gonna have a good time as we always do. I have some things to say. I have some thoughts about the internet discourse of the week regarding Tom King. And we're going to get into that. And
Tom King month.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because I was like, we got to talk about Tom King this week, you know, somehow outside of just the top five Tom King books, which we're going to continue. We'll get our number threes. But I was like, we got to talk about something. And then the gift.
Monkey's paw curled.
Yeah. Yeah. The gift of social media, that piece of shit drops a turd in my lap, which is great on one hand, because it gives us a Tom King thing to talk about. But on the other hand, it's people saying that Tom King is a shitty writer, which couldn't be further from the truth. My thoughts about Wonder Woman notwithstanding, we are not going to allow that narrative to be spewed. Certainly not around these parts. We have thoughts about that on Saturday and a lot more things. Come hang out with us. It's going to be a boatload of fun. That's a Comics Pals guarantee. Thank you so much for tuning in. Patreon.com if you feel like supporting us. Either way, you being here, you listening to us after live, whenever you tune in, however you show your support, means the world to us. Thank you so much. See you Saturday. Until then, we're the Comics Pals signing off. Take care, guys.
See you next week.